I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah.
I think you start there and you tell that, like, what if UBI becomes like kind of the, I always say the gateway drug to becoming a drug addict. What if it is the gateway drug to like removing from poverty, removing from like government programs, opportunity for us to make government smaller. Maybe you start with one single program on the welfare docket with UBI, and then, you know, year two, like we're taking away three or year yeah. five, that you like slowly be like, hey, we don't need this because it's being underutilized.
You're trying to prove it. At the end of the day, you're trying to prove something, right?
Hey there. Welcome to the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts Podcast, where you are encouraged to express your natural thoughts and views through casual, meaningful conversations that hopefully can lead to learning and understanding new perspectives. To find out more info, visit www.gfothoughts.com. Now, here are your hosts, Michael Wong and Robert Din. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another great episode of Gluten Free Organic Thought Podcast. My name is Michael. And always with me, Robert Din.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Welcome back. We have our guest today is Sean White. He's been on our show a few times now. How many times has it been, Sean, that you've been on?
I think this is number four.
Number four.
Yeah. He's almost like a next door neighbor now. You know, we need somebody.
He's basically our third podcast.
Co-host, right?
Co-host, yeah.
Well, this is episode 57 now. So yeah, four episodes. Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
All right, everybody, for today's episode, this is an interesting topic. But before we get started, what are we drinking today? Everybody, who wants to start?
Drinking a combination of agua.
Agua.
Whiskey?
Because you just got to stay hydrated. And then the botanist. Ooh.
Gin.
Number one, Old Faithful. Best
gin
out there.
Are you doing gin water? So you're doing?
No. I'm drinking water.
Gin and I'm also water drinking separately.
Why not mix it together? It's just the same. It goes to the same box.
You got to cook separately.
Do you have a? Does gin taste different when you add like water to it or like ice to it? The same way that whiskey does.
Yeah.
Wait, whiskey tastes different when you add ice to it?
Yeah, people like put droplets of water in. And
oh, really? Whiskey? Yeah. Why?
They're like,
it's like a cooking agent.
Yeah, it just changes the flavor profile. And then they'll be like, yeah, I'll take my whiskey with 3 drops of water or something like that.
That's interesting. All right. Crazy. So what are you drinking, Robert?
I'm drinking Coca-Cola.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, perfect.
No wine today, huh?
No, I'm in Florida, and I don't know. Like, my family doesn't have alcohol, so, like, I don't bring it.
Like, they don't have a secret stash?
Well, my family doesn't really drink at all. So then I would be the only one bringing in alcohol, and then I feel weird. It's like...
What if they have guests, you know?
None of their guests are allowed to drink either, so...
There we go.
Completely dry. Here we go.
Nice. All right, I am drinking this organic cold brew that I just saw for the first time at Trader Joe's. Can you see this? There you go.
In front of your face. There you go.
Yeah.
Trader Joe's.
The organic cold brew. So $1.79. Let's see how this tastes. I mean,
you're tasting it live for us?
Tasting it live right now. Live. Open it right now.
Oh, dang. All right. Let's see the reaction.
Oh, shit. I spilled it everywhere. Hang on. This is
awful. Looks like you're having a great time over there.
Okay, that threw me off a little bit.
So one question here: like, does Wong never drink alcohol on this? Because I think that the three other times
you haven't been
drinking alcohol. When
there's
I'm
times when he'll put like something into his coffee or something, Kahlua, but it's not like straight alcohol.
What are you talking about? I've drinking rosé in front of you guys before. I've drinking
no on the on specifically on the podcast. I know you.
Yeah,
know
on a specific on podcast.
But, yeah. Okay.
Our anniversary episode.
Oh, episode. If you, yeah. It takes a it takes an anniversary for some alcohol to come on.
No. First of all, anniversary episode was rare. I had rosé and I had a beer. So
there you go. See. There you go, Sean. Twice in one episode.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
But I usually do put Kahlua in my coffee on Sundays if it's recorded in the morning earlier than this. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So I do not recommend this for those who are thinking about buying this cold brew.
What if you add something to it? Do you need to add anything to it? Like,
I could add probably like oat milk to it to help dilute it. Oh, okay. That makes more sense now. So it's organic espresso. That's what it is. I was like, wow, this, you know how most cool brews taste like very strong, but this is like, well, it tastes like a whole espresso shot. Okay.
That makes reading sense. Is essential.
Reading. Yeah. Reading helps.
Reading helps, folks. Okay. Don't make sure you go to school, stay in class. All right. So today's episode, it is an interesting topic. I think Sean provided a video earlier during our side chat, and we've seen actually a lot of this example during COVID time as well, where universal basic income has came to talks in the past few elections and more recently the past couple of years. And one of the biggest concern, or I'm not concerned, more like, I guess the attraction behind it is that everyone gets this, and versus what we have today in wealth and welfare. So just going into the conversation, I think the question we're trying to answer today is universal income, can it be better than welfare, right? And I think two things that we need to talk about considering as we, you know, we move along this conversation is the costs, economical costs behind this, and the benefits. Obviously, for those who are listening, you know, we're not pros at this. We'll just go by what we read, what we have captured, data, video.
And we cooked up in our heads.
Yes. We're all different line of work. So therefore, we think differently, which is great, I think, too, especially when we come to kind of, we're all different tier classes. You know, Sean's above us now. So is Robert, you know, so it's kind of, I'm the lower tier class. So I could compare a little better.
Wow. I don't think that's how it should be measured.
Just kidding.
Also, when you were so much higher than us and we catch up to you, now you can't talk like that.
All right. So kicking off this conversation off, right? So what is welfare, right? So Robert, you want to define welfare for us?
Define welfare? I don't know. I think in this conversation we should restrict welfare to like food stamps and
just living.
Yeah, cash assistance. Yeah, living costs. Okay, that's good. And then universal income, basic income is pretty much everybody gets a flat fee every month, right? Are we talking about that?
Andrew
Yang, $1,000 a month.
Said $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month. And then when COVID started, he said something like $2,000 a month to every person.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like the what we've been hearing in like the news.
So let's talk about welfare first before we jump into universal income, right? First of all, welfare. Do you feel like personally for you guys, for you seeing, is it working for the United States? I mean, if not, why do you think it's not working?
Okay. It's definitely not working. The whole creation of welfare was so that people would be sustainable on their own. Mm-hmm. The goal wasn't to be on welfare for the rest of your life.
Correct.
A lot of people, it's kind of, instead of generational wealth, there's generational welfare. Like people grow up on welfare and their kids go to welfare. Yeah, and just like stay. There's a lot of reasons that we go down to kind of like sum up exactly why. It's like, you know, it's easier to get welfare and get more benefits if you have more kids. You get welfare if you don't have a spouse, if you're not working. So like these like welfare like
loopholes, I guess.
Welfare loopholes like stack if you do a lot of things that don't help you grow generational wealth.
So the penalize, you're saying they penalize you just if you're trying to do better for yourself, you know they try to penalize you. Hey, you know what? You should do this instead to stay in welfare, instead of do this to better your life in general.
Yeah. I mean, think about it literally right now. There's people that are on minimum wage that have been out of work when COVID happened.
Yep.
And they're refusing to go back to work because they have to go to unsafe conditions because, you know, COVID's popping back up. Yep. But they also are getting paid more money staying home on welfare than they would going back to work.
That's actually a good point, because if you think about it, a lot of restaurants, even Uber, Lyft, are struggling finding people because one, minimum wage is such a low amount, and then all that. Right now I see McDonald's or Burger King are providing like $500 incentive if you start work within 14 days, stay within the business, working with them for 30 days. Like they're actually doing extra incentive, and I think they jacked up the wage from like 11 to 15 now. So
yeah, but it's crazy that like you can have like a full-time job, but then when all this COVID stuff happened, if you quit your job and just got unemployment and welfare, you'd be making more money than what you would get if you had a full-time job.
And I think in order to we people of welfare, you think the rules should change though, at least to get that started, engage the rule, change the mindset, and try to somehow encourage people, hey, go find a job, you know, because if you cut it off, right, you may have, there's a repercussion of behind it, you know, because now it may cost the city more money to clean up some stuff up, right?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to think about it like a very tiered system. Like, you can't do a peanut butter spread across the country and say,
correct,
everyone's getting 1,000, everyone's getting 5,000. Like, it, the way that we did like our COVID relief checks isn't the way that we should do UBI. You know, $1,000 is going to be great for some sites or for some states, and it should be like much higher for other states.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. Hey. First of all, $1,200 in California is nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't pay a third of your rent. Like, it's just
a third.
I don't know, maybe a half. But like, yeah, it doesn't pay for anything really. Going to like a more high cost city. But if you gave someone $1,200 in like, I don't know, middle Idaho, that takes them a long way. That'll keep hold them
like,
for a long time.
That's at least 2 months of rent for that. A lot of people, you know, $1,200. So
yeah.
But Sean, I agree your point. I feel like you can't just assume everyone's the same every single state, because like every state's different, population density, cost, living cost, etc. But even to further break down, like even by county, slightly different. Like living style, living cost in Orlando versus Miami, it's night and day.
It's true. That's true.
So, you know, it's the same exact thing where you go to Houston and Austin. It's night and day.
Yeah. So I think you do that calculus and then you figure out like, hey, this is going to replace that. And I think it's something you get for a lifetime. It's not something that you're doing just for a period. It gives you a little bit of financial flexibility. It gives you.
Are you talking about UBI right now? Are you talking about your healthcare?
UBI.
Yeah. So before we get into a little bit more detail UBI, but I just want to drill down a little bit more about welfare, right? So what is the connotation right now about welfare? It also has a bad image about it, right? Because from a society standpoint, if you have welfare, you just look down upon. That's what it is. So with UBI though, that changes the image perspective, like, you know, and that sounds like, oh, everybody's getting it, so it's okay to get it. So the selection criteria between welfare and UBI, now should that be the same going forward? Let's say that I decided tomorrow, you know what, let's switch off welfare, go to UBI. Should it be the same selection criteria, or should it be a little bit more stingy, where UBI should be like a little bit more broad?
In my opinion, I feel like, I mean, in the name, universal, I think it should be, everyone should be able to apply for it. Everyone should be able to get it. It shouldn't be based on really anything else beyond that. And I think that you should do a simultaneous, I don't know exactly how you wave it out, but you should do a pretty short range cut of welfare and just switch over. Mm. So is it going to work cleanly? No, but
no, of course not.
When your current program is, you know, been around for plus 50 years and hasn't solved the problem that you're trying to do, you can't just keep it in because like, hey, this is what we're used to.
That's true. You know, I completely agree. I mean, think about this. I think most generous welfare programs are in Finland and France, right? And it's crazy because they spend a lot of money on the welfare program. Like, it's like 30% of their GDP. I'm not even kidding. It's huge. And keep in mind, those countries are not really like the United States. So the I'm gonna post a link here. It shows you the top 10 welfare programs, and it's nuts. I believe because the population poverty rate is 8% for them. So one of the things with their welfare, it kind of includes a little bit more also with the, obviously like Medicaid included in a sense. But Finland, the same thing, it's probably 30% of the program of the GDP. Belgium's another one. Italy's another one. They spend a lot of money on the social programs. So it's mind blowing.
Yeah, they spend a lot. Does this, do they have any like proof that this helps their poverty?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that, whether that helps the people or not, though, but in a sense, they've been doing that for quite a while, right? So for United States, right? So for United States, I believe in what, in 2016, they spent over $1.1 trillion, something stupid on welfare. It's nuts, you know. Even
just and like, what is our like identified poverty rate?
United States
in the U.S.
Oh,
it's still the highest.
It's still the highest, actually. Yeah,
because these have like 10%. Other, it's like some are down to 5%, but they're all still around 8 to 10. Percent.
United States poverty rate is literally about 10.5%, and our average poverty threshold amount is 26k per family, two adults, two children.
So yeah, so I mean, we're still in line with all of these countries,
correct? Yeah, but keep in mind our population, it's much bigger than those countries also.
Yeah, so it should be harder to to fix, right? Or like to
hard, well, it is hard for. It is harder to fix, but it's also harder to implement too though, like just like Sean said, right? It's scattered around, you know, for depending on the region, right? So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so let you know, before we switch to UBI to converse a little bit more with welfare though, right? The thing is that with welfare is like, I think Sean, you brought this up earlier when you were talking about how it kind of translate generation to generation. Instead of forcing them to be better, it forces them to stay there. And it shouldn't be like that. So you think it would be easier to try to fix that than implement UBI?
I mean, there's the analogy, like, do you really want to just like take a broken boat and just keep trying to fix it versus bringing in a brand new one?
Just touch on the hole in a sense. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, yes, could it be fixed? Probably, potentially. But we spent decades trying to implement and change it. Like, oh, we'll add this, we'll add this, we'll take this away. Like, there's been tons of pushes and pulls to fix it.
I honestly think it can't be fixed. We just have too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes to like our government. That, like, when we try to like implement something, there's always so many people trying to push different things into all these bills, and like nothing, it all just comes out as mush, right? Like, it just doesn't. I don't think there's a way for us to create a system that will do what it wants to do without like being ridiculously complicated. I feel like UBI is very simple. Like, it's just like, it's simple enough that like the government can't even fuck it up. Like, that's,
I mean, you'd be surprised.
I mean, it's possible, but like, if it was just like,
if anybody can do it, they can.
That's true.
Okay, UBI, universal basic income. So pretty much it considers pretty much the basic needs that you need to survive, in a sense, living costs and food. Just for people don't know what UBI is. Is that just living costs in terms of like covering your rental stuff?
No, I don't think UBI covers that. It's supplemental money that the government is giving you to cover like your expenses. Your job should cover like your expenses. This should be a little bit of tack on to kind of say like, hey, if my expenses are $3,000 a month, this extra $1,000 gives me a little bit of buffer to do whatever I need to do, whether it's education, whether it's just social, like emotional, like mental fulfillment, because like there's a huge, mental crisis in America that, you know, we need to solve. And then, you know, it just gives you a buffer if you want to like be a little risky and start your own business or do whatever. I think there's a lot of benefits outside of economic that this would help.
So obviously for the UBI will benefit different class differently, right? Where the lower class, they may be not able to worry about, you know, this month's rent in a sense, right? Or where you're a little more in the middle class where you can take this extra money, perhaps you can use it, like you said, to start a business, to kind of add some side income, or maybe to go back to education. So currently right now in the world, there are different basic income, you know, around the world that's being, this table here shows an amazing job at it, where it shows like certain countries and certain cities are tested out certain things for how long period of time, and also shows them what criteria they're trying to test out in regards to UBI. So take a look at that. It's pretty much a chart of of, I guess, different program that's been going on by year in the middle. And so it tells you, hey, right now, currently, you know, in the 2020 right now, there are certain ongoing programs like in Spain, you know.
Do we need to go for like what Alaska's been doing this for like 30 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Alaska be doing different. That's because they have that oil there. You got to send that though. And so it's different too though. You're right. It's been there for 30 years, but the amount is very low though, keep that in mind. So it's almost like a dividend in a sense though for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so. it's still giving people money for being there.
And also it's because they want people to come there. You know what I mean? To live there, to actually, you know, expand. I mean,
and the incentive of UBI is we want people to contribute to the economy.
Society. Yeah. Correct. Once you have a UBI, people maybe spend more, right? Like I said. It says that we decided to implement UBI too, right? What would you think the right amount would be? Like you mentioned that they should vary per state, right? So like would people try to move to another state for more money, you think?
It's possible. I feel like
people do that today. Like, I mean, there's certain people that move. Like, I know specifically, like, friends, family members that are like, all right, I'm going to work for city government or whatever role. I get paid, you know, six figures being a bus driver in New York versus what I would get paid in Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, I can take this, you know, job that perceivably has like lower barriers to entry. And get paid a very good living. So like people do that left, right.
You know. Regardless, I guess, we have UBI or not. That's true. Okay. So now then you think, you know, what Andrew Yang said, you know, $1,000 a month will help? Or do you think, is that too little?
There would have to be some component of like cost of living adjustment to the amount. If we're doing it nationwide, right? Like if we're doing it locally, then it's different. Right.
I don't think it's a minimum $1,000, honestly. I think you really need to just look at what the costs are, what the state's bringing in. Like Alaska isn't solid $1,000. Like it goes, it's been less than $1,000 for some years. It's been over $2,000.
I think Alaska depends on the number of people living there, and if there is a dividend fund, so the less people, the more money there is, or there's more people, the less money there is. So for them, it's a little bit different. So
how do you think we should tackle it? Should it be like, hey, we have like we're getting all these taxes in every year. Let's take, I don't know, 1% of it and then divvy that up, or I don't know, probably 1% is a lot, but like get a certain percentage and then divvy it back out to everyone.
So I guess the people who should qualify for a UBI is the person who should have a citizenship, right? I think the also part of it is
I think that goes without, sorry to cut you off, but I think that goes without question. Like you have to be like a U.S. citizen to get it. I think you, same way that you get tax refunds only if you're a U.S. citizen.
Correct.
I think that should be the same case for this. I think if we're trying to get rid of welfare, I think the programs that we're taking out, you look at the money that's being allocated and spent to that. That is the pot that we
reallocate. But now you're
going to a lot more people, but I think there's also the sense of like, this isn't paying anyone's full month expenses. Maybe this is paying a portion of food or a portion of rent. Mm-hmm. This isn't changing anyone's life. And you still have to apply for this.
Okay. It's not automatically everybody. Okay. So let them apply for, so that way, at least if you want it, you can apply. If you don't want it, that's fine.
Right. Yeah. And I know the wealthy are going to have, you know, people that do all of their taxes and stuff. And maybe they apply for this. They get 1,000 to whatever. But there's going to be a decent amount of people that let this money go unclaimed.
No, I 100% agree on that part because they may not need it, right? And if at the heart.
Do you think that if we make people apply for it, it'll create the similar stigma that welfare has now?
That's a good question, too.
Otherwise, like if we could give everybody who puts in a tax return,
I don't think it will.
I think the stigma is going to be for probably the fringe people. I don't want to. I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but like maybe around our range, where it's like, hey, like you're really like going in and to get that $1,000 a month, like, do you really?
I'll be like, hell yeah.
Versus,
yeah, Sean, I'm applying. Like people, if it's apply, I'm applying today.
Yeah, me too.
If anybody yesterday already, I'm waiting for the check.
Yeah, but I think where the judgment or you know, stink sits is probably a much higher level up. I think there's going to be a large pool below that. No one's going to be like, oh, why are you applying for this $1,000? Because that pays for like a quarter of my rent. So yeah,
and only that, this is eligible for everybody who's actually a citizen, right? So therefore, it's not like you're poor, you have to qualify. You're in middle class, you're making $200K, you still apply for it. Mm-hmm. So it's not, I don't think the stigma would be there. I feel like it's more like, why aren't you applying for it?
I think there would be a stigma, I don't know, coming from the Asian background where everyone is very prideful. If you apply for this, it's gonna look bad on you, right? Versus like someone else in the community. So I feel like that stigma will be created, just by making it a forced application. Other than giving it to anyone who's bringing in a tax return,
that goes back to like, who are we trying to help? Like the issue that we're trying to resolve is poverty in America. And if you're trying to resolve that, the people that have the ability to be concerned about how it looks are probably in a situation much better. Like, no one that's like true. Sitting outside in a box is like, yeah, I didn't do UBI because I didn't want my neighbor to think bad. Like,
I didn't see that blue check that comes in the mail. They saw me pull out that blue envelope, and that's it. That's true.
Okay, listen, I feel like, okay, first of all, I think UBI with Asians, I don't think it's that bad of a thing, because I think this is pretty common already in Asia already. Singapore has that already, so does China. And so I feel like even Hong Kong has it too. Like, I don't feel like it's a bad thing, right?
No, I'm just saying in general, like as a pride thing, it could be something. I'm not saying that Asians love money and love getting free money. They'll apply for it all.
Like, I agree.
I'm 100%. Every Asian out there is going to apply for this thing. They need to. But I'm just like, I don't know why there needs to be a barrier there to get this.
No.
I mean, I think part of it is like, we want people to be engaged. Like, the big activity thing is like, yeah, we want people to like spur the national economy, and like, hey, this is something that you need to do to get something. It's a very low hurdle. Like, we're not asking.
Very low hurdle. Yeah, I agree. It's like right now, okay, so the example right now with unemployment, right, where
but like, also it's probably a bigger hurdle applying for welfare than it is for like applying for this, because like, when you're applying for welfare, especially like, we're not tacking in all the things that sit under the welfare bucket. We're just like talking about like food and housing and, you know, some of the basic stuff. Like, those are all separate applications that people go to to fill out. And
food stamp is different, so does financial aid is different, housing is different, Medicaid is different, everything's different. Mm-hmm. Which they don't make it easy for them to apply. It is a hurdle.
Mm-hmm. So, but I also know people that probably should be on getting food stamps, and it would help them a lot, which they wouldn't do because of like stigma, right, against them. Like, oh, I'm working, I don't need food stamps, right? Like,
well, they wouldn't even qualify for food stamps, right? People who, I mean,
that's not true. People work. No. Some people who are working still can qualify.
Oh, that's the same. But not everybody though. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying like, there's some people that are like on the fringe to like, oh, they could apply and like help themselves a little bit, and they just don't do it because of there's stigma against them.
I mean, I think one really good example of that is, I think most of us, when we were in college, could have applied for food stamps.
Yeah.
I know a few friends that like did, because they're like, hey, I'm not working, I'm getting like a little bit of government assistance or whatnot, and I'm in debt, you know. But a lot of people didn't. And it is something that you, again, had to apply
for. I didn't even know you could do it. But I would have done it if I knew about it. But I was working two jobs at the same time, though. So, I mean, if I knew about it, I would definitely apply for that.
Right, and then we'll have people that are like, oh, later on they'll be like, oh, I should have signed up for UBI because I just didn't know that I could.
No, I think education is going to come down one thing as well. UBI, it's just how you sell it to people, right? One of it is like, hey, this is to supplement what you need to do for your needs to really stress. It's not to to compensate certain things. And with UBI though, like, I think we need to talk about the cost of that as well, but we'll get that into a second. But in terms of the benefits, we know the benefits is there. 100% sure, right? And again, it's going to come down to how the message is being delivered, because they know that this is going to be there forever. So the question is, though, now, is incentive for them to, it has to be enough where they still want to apply to get free money, but also it has to be just enough where it doesn't spoil them and it's not stimulating them from working. You see what I'm saying?
It shouldn't be enough where they can live off of.
Correct.
Like, that's already like a given, right? Like, I don't think anybody's looking at UBI as like, oh, now I don't need to work at all anymore. I have UBI.
Yeah.
I don't think that's...
So now for the cost of this, right? Do you think people were willing to pay more taxes for this cost?
I don't think we need to pay more taxes, though. I think that when you remove some of the welfare programs, like, that should cover the cost.
Well, you reallocate the money. I get that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like with the welfare program, the money, I don't think it's enough for UBI. Now you're opening the pool for everybody more now.
So. Yeah, I don't think it's enough either. I think because now, instead of just the poorest people that we're giving this out to everyone. That if we just reallocate, it'll just be like $500 or I don't know, probably $200 for everybody, right? Something pretty small, because you're expanding it to a much larger population.
Yeah.
Of people.
Larger population, also a house of family too, keep in mind, so different too. So, yeah.
So I think there would probably be additional taxes that would need to be added on, or reallocate other funding that we have to go towards it.
Well, or do you actually get, what's it called? Get this, because you know how this is all on federal level right now, right? And do you get the state to participate in this, hold them accountable to make sure that certain money gets distributed correctly? And so
how do we enforce that on a state level and allocate it on a state level?
Because you had to get the state involved to make sure you adjust the living cost of that UBI, right, already. So you have to get them involved regardless.
Well, all right. Maybe I'm trying to come from a too simplistic like viewpoint. Yeah. I think the big thing is like, does this solve the problem? Like, we can figure out like how we make it work or what it's a cost, but does it solve the problem? And I think it does. Like, I think the big issue is like, you see it across all cities across the world right now. Like, poverty in tent city growth is like escalating at a rate we've never seen before. Like, I thought when I lived on the West Coast, it's like, oh yeah, it's just a West Coast thing where like, you know, there's tent cities around. I reached out to a few of my like family members. Like, there's tent cities in downtown Baltimore now. Like, it's a growing thing and something that we need to figure out a new problem, a new way to solve. And obviously, welfare isn't doing.
When you say tent city, you mean like homeless tents?
Homeless, like in downtown areas. Like, it used to be outskirts of town. Used to be under overpasses. Now it's on, you know. And some streets. Big cities like main streets, like
no, it's expanding for sure. But also, okay, so Sean, to your point, I don't think it completely solves the problem, because part of the welfare program is also education in it too. If you take out the welfare program, you're removing this part of the education to get people back on their feet to work though. So there is welfare program does have those kind of programs to help people. Like literally, like if people, I mean, obviously those people who want to get back to their feet to work, things like that, like it does have that kind of program to transition them into a career. But if you're removing that part of the program, I feel like having UBI, yes, but I feel like the education of people who actually needs to get back to work, that kind of program needs to be there, though. That kind of education still needs to be there.
I don't think we're talking about that in like our welfare.
Yeah. We're talking about a lot of the programs that are, you know, keeping people on welfare for the rest
long
of their
period
life.
Time, yeah.
Yeah. They're like cash incentive.
So cash incentive.
We're essentially giving people cash incentive to do bad things.
That's true. Yeah. And so I guess with UBI though, would those people do the same bad thing though?
I don't know, because
this isn't enough money for them to do some of those same
bad things. Because with UBI, they it covers their cost of surviving and needs, mm-hmm. where UBI it barely it doesn't.
Yeah. Also, like in the video, it shows like they also talk about this. Where like if you reach a certain threshold, you lose your welfare completely. So people,
that's true.
People do all kinds of gymnastics to get to the point where they're not over their limit, so they can continue.
Well, like Sean said, right? They get penalized for trying to do better.
Right. So then,
yeah.
UBI doesn't have that negative, like that drop off point.
That's true, because you could do better. You can make 100K a year, and
you're still getting
it's the UBI. Yeah.
UBI. Yeah.
And there's also like, not to like fully down like the welfare program, like there's plenty of people that have been on welfare, climbed out of it, and like specifically go back to like their communities to give back. This will hopefully be like an incentive for people to also do that same thing, but kind of just like not leave that stigma of like, all right, I'm just gonna like stay here.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm down for UBI. I guess my biggest concern is just cost, because especially with a country that's this much debt in it, I don't know. Obviously, expert has to do some kind of analysis whether how much really this would help the economy wise to stimulate the economy versus actually, you know, the cost of that's actually utilizing. I mean, there's a lot of countries who's probably trying this right now, especially after COVID, and I mean, there's a lot of different study cases out there, so we'll find out, hopefully.
What I really find that I think is promising is the fact that, like, I feel like there'd be a lot more people taking chances because they know they have this, right? So then
I agree.
We will have a lot more small businesses coming out of this because they're like, okay, even if this fails, I still have at least $1,000. I don't have to go out and make... I don't have to make like my full income that I was had before.
You're not to get McDonald's. You don't have to go to McDonald's to get another job, you know?
Yeah. And then you can just have this as like a backup and like, okay, we can like eat ramen for like, for a little while we get everything set up and have everything.
I agree. I do see that being a benefit as, you know, like I said, forcing people to pretty much like educate themselves more to get better jobs, probably perhaps. Probably help, you know, with balancing daycare. I don't know, who knows, you know, how much cost daycare costs per month for certain cities, for kids and even parents and stuff, or even like you said, start a business, you know, start an online business, whatever. So
yeah, and they've shown that like people who get an extra, like people who are not in like the wealthiest class, when they get more money, they're not spending it frivolously. They're actually putting it towards something that's like,
correct.
That'll help their situation. So I don't think there will always be some people who are going to take advantage of it, but I mean, you can't be accounting for
we just have to do something that's gonna like help change and give like a little bit more of a pathway to improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in this topic wise, there, it sounds like we're all in agreement that UBI is better than welfare. But obviously, in order to replace welfare, there has to be a certain program that will stay in welfare, but from a cash perspective, this should all be removed in a sense.
I don't think none of us on this like podcast are enough involved into the welfare like system, so we can't say like exactly what needs to be cut or what doesn't.
Yeah,
but like I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah,
I think you start there and you tell that like what if UBI becomes like kind of the I always say the gateway drug to becoming a drug addict. What is the gateway drug to like removing from poverty, removing from like government programs, opportunity for us to make government smaller, you know?
Well, to be honest with you,
maybe you start with one single program on the welfare, on the welfare docket with UBI. And then, you know, year two, like we're taking away three or year five, that you like slowly be like, hey, we don't need this because it's being underutilized.
You're trying to prove it. I get it. At the end of the day, you're trying to prove something, right? So I feel like this is why we're going back to the state level. I feel like if the state wants to qualify for this program, UBI, hey, apply for this state. This will help you stay out, right? For example, if California decided to apply for this, and then you could test demo out for your state of California. Hey, UBI, for state, everyone in California. Like you get people to vote into it, right? like you said, get the engagement. So this will force people to go to the congressman. Hey, can we, can Florida apply to be in the UBI program? So, and then you have this waiting list now as people try to, you know, as it gets, not only builds a little bit of hype, but also it's kind of builds a little bit more of, you still to test pilot the program slowly and you try to fix your kinks one day at a time. And so you could build probably a standardization out of that once you think, you know, as let's say, you know, Florida applies for it and then Florida situation might be a little different from other state, but at least you can learn something from Florida whether that it's working or not. And you get study, you get more data out of that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because like,
yeah, I think I said this on another podcast, we can't like shoot for the magic bullet. Like we have, like this problem wasn't created in 1 year. We can't expect it to be resolved at five. Yeah. Like we have to like tailor out.
How long has the welfare program been out now? For over like 40 years or something?
No. It's been, I thought it was in the, I'm gonna spit out a dumb number. I think it was 1960. Actually, I'm 1960 was when it got updated. So before 1960.
When did welfare start in the United States program? The history of it. 1939. Jesus Christ. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was that long of a history. Guess, you know, guess who did it?
Yeah, so let's try something different. Like yeah. maybe it doesn't work, but like you what did it say? You can't do the same thing and expect different results.
Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt. Hmm. Oh, he started with Social Security. Sorry, not so. It's 1959. Sorry, the actual welfare program is 1959. Yeah, I don't count Social Security as welfare to be honest, but whatever.
Social Security is a different podcast.
I will not ever get to cash in on.
None of us will cash in Social Security because it's.
I told my parents, cash in as much as you need with Social Security because we won't get the cash in.
They should cash. They'll cash it all in and then leave some for us.
All right,
the will.
Let's take a pause break here. We're gonna go to our extra energy session right now. What do you have for us today, Robert?
Oh me. I just have. A story. So I'm in Florida for 3 weeks and I forgot how much I hated the heat in Florida. It is so hot here.
The heat or the humidity?
Both. Like, whoa. It is, what is it today? It's, I think it's like 95 outside, feels like 108. Like,
is it?
Ridiculous. That's, or at least that's what it was yesterday. I remember I walked out of the airport. The doors opened up and I started sweating immediately. And I was like, this shit sucks.
You get used to it. Don't worry.
No, I will not. And I don't want it to. I think when I was here, that's why I left. Because I was like, I don't want to be to like this. I don't want to be used to this.
Awesome. I agree with you. I do not miss the humidity. And it sucks so bad. This is why I hate running outdoors sometimes right now. Because it's so bad. Like, it's like I don't even go half a mile. I'm already drenching in sweat already.
And like, people are used to heat here. I went home.
Yeah, see,
I went home. Welfare's
too much like AC. You know, we need to find a way to make it unbearable.
Yeah. people are too used to the heat here. I went home. My mom's house was 80 degrees in the house. And I was like, this is too hot. My dad's house was 82 degrees.
Why? Like,
why are you not turning on the air conditioner?
Wait. Does it have the window open?
No. It's
just not, there's no fan?
There's a fan, but it's like a small fan in a big room.
So he's so used to it.
I'm like, no. Like, we gotta turn this down. Like,
maybe Robert, maybe COVID made you weak because you were quarantined for a whole year with AC.
No, I don't think that is.
No. I remember when I was. I think it's a generational thing. Like my Puerto Rican great uncle, he lives in Florida. He grew up in Puerto Rico, no AC, no nothing. Had a house in in Palm Coast, and essentially would never turn the AC on. Had the front door open with the screen, back door open, and the fans going.
Yeah.
Despite the fact he's got plenty of money, he's like a veteran, like, you know, doesn't need to worry about like his utility expense. Like, just sit here in my basketball shorts and my, you know, tank top, and keep the fan going.
I don't know.
I'm just saying, like, my house is ranges between 78 and 75, I guess, depends on the time.
Oh,
75 and 78?
Yeah. So I think
75 is my limit. Like, that's where everything should be.
But I mean, you get used to it. I don't know. Like, I hate the humidity. I hate the humidity, don't get me wrong, I really do. But being back, I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna take it as it is. Every day is a sauna.
That's it. I also hate when I'm in California, I talk to people about how hot it is. I'm like, well, really everyone has AC. We run from AC to AC, but that in between is still like ruthless. Like I really hate it. Like going from the store to your car and then waiting for your car to cool up. It's still bad.
Hey, try to have a bonfire right now outside in the nighttime.
And I was telling Sean earlier, I remember when we were in college, there was multiple years and multiple summers where I didn't have AC in my car. And I was just like, all right, I'll just put the window down and go as fast as I can to get some air. Yeah. But like, I can't do that now. Like
you become spoiled. That's what happened. You know?
Yeah, that's what
happens. All right, so Sean, what's your funny thing today?
I sent you guys a video.
Ooh, the video. Let's see the video. Where is the video?
Sean sent the TikTok video.
Let's watch this. So those who are listening, it's pretty much a TikTok video of a lady swinging, doing a swing, and it's gonna hit some kid.
Yeah. You got to run up. So like, essentially, kid's at the park, but his mom is swinging on the swing.
You think that's a mom?
I don't know. Just assume it's
Oh no! Oh man, he's walking back and forth between. Oh, he's going back and forth.
Oh my god!
Yeah. It just doesn't look like it's gonna end well.
Oh my god! It's going back and forth. He twice.
Really got knocked over.
Oh, so he got knocked over eventually, though. Oh, the second time around. Wasted. So he went back twice. Oh. Listen, he tried.
Yeah, he just like flew too close to the sun. You know, some people don't read Greek mythology, but. We'll give this kid an Icarus book.
You think he flopped though? I can see they barely skipped.
You think he flopped? Is he LeBron James?
I know, right? Watch this video. Like, did he get really hit or did he get hit or flopped?
He got hit, bro.
He flew.
He got
uplifted. I don't think that kid has. If that kid can jump that high, they need to stop doing TikToks. They need to put them in sports. Everyone.
Why would the mom not stop?
I don't know.
It was behind her the first time.
So I don't know if this is the mom. This might be like a sister or cousin or even just like.
You can tell there's an adult on the left side. By the way, there's an adult on the left side who's not doing anything.
I mean,
and who's filming this? The person who's filming this probably also looking at this too.
Yeah.
Bad things happen. People like to pull out the camera.
I'm just saying, like.
But at the end of the day, I got a few laughs and chuckles. So. That's what we need.
All right. So mine's not funny. Mine's kind of cute in a sense because it's so weird. I never seen like a pinwheel puppies. So pretty much it's a video of, you know, these puppies kind of getting fed, but they go in circle. Is it like, I think it's like 8 or 9 puppies and they go in circle and they just clean up the whole bowl. It's kind of weird. They go counterclockwise. It's like, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 puppies. And they just literally eat the whole time.
Whoa. Give me a little motion sickness, but it is pretty cute.
But it's so random, though. Why would they do that, though? That makes no sense. Why don't you stay in your own spot and eat your own spot?
Yeah. All right, trying to get exercise.
So they put it down, and the dogs, the dogs are spinning around in circles. There's like, six dogs?
Seven dogs. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Man. Why would they do this?
Right? I don't get it. Like, how, you know?
That video is also going back and like backwards and forwards and stuff. That's why you're feeling.
That's probably is too, you know. And then I have another one I can pick, but this one is pretty funny too because it's a sign. So, pretty much, so it literally titles, you know, I wonder how many times this had happened. It's literally a stop sign. It says, stop. GPS is wrong. The road ends here.
This is a picture?
Yeah, it's a picture, yeah.
Alright, we're gonna let it load for a second.
It's that Florida internet, man.
That Florida internet does not work well.
to load an image. You want your dial-up?
I don't know.
One line of time image.
it's my uncle's internet, so that's what.
I mean, we're hearing just fine, so.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. It's taking a while.
Well, here we go. Maybe this will help.
Yeah, the image right there.
Oh, you're sending it? Oh, I got it. It came up finally. Stop. GPS is wrong. Road ends here. Is this a real sign? You think it's a real sign?
I don't know. It looks like it. It could be Photoshop. Who knows? But it's still pretty funny that it is real, though.
Yeah. The humor is real if the sign isn't.
Is there funny comments to this? I remember one day, well, there was one time we were going somewhere. I don't know. We were leaving it's me, my mom, my dad, and we were leaving their friend's house and getting out of their neighborhood. And so like we saw a sign that said dead end ahead. But my dad was like so sure he was going the right way. And my mom was like, "Hey, it says dead end." And he said in Vietnamese, he's like, he said gay na, which means like, okay, let them do what they want to do. Like, let them say what they want to say. This is the way to go, right? So that's what he said. And he went down to the end of the block and he's like, "Oh, this is a dead end." we're like, yeah.
I told you that already.
That's what it said earlier.
That is pretty funny, though.
Oh, okay. Well, I normally don't do Reddit, but another friend sent me a Reddit video that's a little apropos about your motherland, Dan.
My motherland.
Just saw someone post a new picture of his pet. And what is that? I can't tell. What is it? Is that alligator? What is that?
Yeah. Snake? It's an alligator.
It's an alligator. That is funny.
Yeah, but the comments are pretty funny below. It's like, this is the most Florida thing in Vietnam.
Yeah, that is funny. That is hilarious.
It's a guy with a pet alligator or crocodile. Yeah. Oh my god!
When a Vietnamese man is infected with Florida.
Yeah, that is funny.
I'm gonna go back to Vietnam with my alligator.
There we go. All right, so this part of the episode, I'm curious to know. You know, I have a question for both of you guys. All right, so. If you had the desired amount of UBI, what would that be for you?
Just wondering. I think it's 1,000 for me.
Really?
I think 1,000 words.
1,000 for you. Really?
Yeah, I think 1,000 doesn't drastically change anything for me.
Do we get to just choose a number? Like,
yes. I'm going to say
$100,000 a month.
No.
Just give me whatever money is out there. I'm okay with it.
I'm realistically though, let's say that you obviously cannot pass more than $3,000. Or how about this? It cannot pass your more than 80% of your rent. Okay.
More than 80% of my rent. Okay.
It will not pass 80% rent.
I'm glad I live in San Francisco.
Not more than 80%.
No, but obviously that would change if you go to a different state though, right? So.
Yeah, when I was in Florida, my rent was $1,000 a month.
Okay, I guess would an ideal number be half of your rent? Would that be enough?
I think that's too much.
Honestly, I think it's a lot. Yeah. If we really want a service that's like doing what we're trying to do, I think maybe
half of your rent though.
25%.
People live at $1,200 and half of the rent $600 a month.
I'm not saying that. I just think that rent for a decent amount of people, like the rent range is crazy. Like,
yeah.
I think back to Oxford Manor in Gainesville, like. What we were paying like less than $1,000.
I was paying $1,000 5 years ago for a 2-bedroom apartment. So
I guess I was paying $700 per month in Gainesville. So I was spending most, and that's the most expensive part too.
Yeah. And yeah, I was spending other nice spot. So
yeah, I was right from the school. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think 1,000 is like that median line and it goes somewhere up and below from there.
So $1,000 for you. How about you, Robert? What would that be?
$1,000. I mean, it would depend on the city, right? But like, probably if I was in like Florida, say we're living in Florida.
Yep.
Florida probably $1,000. I think in somewhere like California, you'd have to make it $2,000.
I think Florida for me, it had to be $1,500.
$1,500.
By saying Florida, $1,500. Yeah.
But that pays your like full rent easily. and you can live off of $1,500 a month.
Well, I mean, I don't think we should let Wong answer this question, given like Wong's budgeting and how he likes to.
That's true.
Wong hasn't had HBO for 15 years because of his financial hardships.
That's true.
I don't have HBO
at
all.
He's at it so tough. So tough. I like the idea
of like somewhere around $1,000. A little bit up, a little bit less, depending on because it,
you think Andrew Yang
is never going to be a crush, because I think the big thing is like one of the things Andrew Yang was pushing for was like, speaking of that, is like, I'm not getting rid of welfare. Like, this is a staff supplement to welfare. And I think what you do, the way you make this work, is like, yes, it's going to be a little more expensive at the beginning, but you stack this on top of welfare. And slowly you phase out.
Yeah, I agree.
Out pieces of welfare, so it's gonna be a lot more expensive at the beginning. But I mean, yeah, the 3-5 stimulus checks that we've passed out, like, we didn't have a budget for that. Like, we find a way to do something that's gonna.
Dude, I hope we don't roll off like that, because that stimulus budget thing, the way they roll off stuff, is so horrible. My god.
I mean, it's okay. Like, when it all pays out, I'll move to Finland or something like that, and not have to worry about this.
That's it's true. Funny because, like, I feel like the stimulus was supposed to help supplement people's income that they've lost, and it was so low, so that, like, it was like $600 every 6 months or something that people got, something like that. Like, 600 is low, like, that for 6 months, right? Like, I don't.
And it took 3 months to roll it out.
It took time to roll out. It felt like I don't know.
Yeah, but I think it splinters out and branches out way too much if we try to figure out like how the government does it or what.
I think
the question is like, should we be doing something different?
I think it's
pretty clear we should be doing something.
I definitely agree with your point, Sean. It definitely needs to try to change the boat for sure. I guess the question is, so how you change it, that would vary. That's a whole different conversation we could have, but.
I wonder what the counter argument is against it. Like, what if we, like, I feel like three of us might be in different
areas.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the same things that we are friends. Welfare for. I think it's a lot of the same thing. People are going to use the sales and bucks. They're going to smoke weed. They're going to, like, do
drugs.
Not smoke weed, because weed is legal now. But they're going to do, like, they're going to spend this frivolously. And I think it comes down to, like, people that are on welfare more times than not are not using that extra money, harmfully. There's a lot of people that are fake not married, fake not living together, to get all of the.
You're gonna have your benefits. People. Yeah, you're gonna have those people that who are gonna be.
What do you mean, you people?
You people, Yeah, but wow, no, but you're gonna have you're gonna cancel people. Mike. Wait, I'm gonna get canceled before we get started. No, but for real, like, it's just there's gonna be people who's gonna try to take advantage of this no matter what, and that's for sure. That's 100% for sure. But the question is, though, like, do we let those people ruin that program for everybody else? Like, you know what I mean? Like that, that it's just like, if 80% people are benefiting this, it takes about 20% to ruin that. Is it really worth it to cancel the program, right? And I think one of the top three arguments against UBI, it's laziness, right? Will people be not incentives to work? Sean, we kind of answered that a little bit earlier before today. Like, it will actually give them more freedom to kind of work, but also at the same time, we're thinking about it from our class level. We're not thinking about it from other side either as well, though.
I also think, like, that's why the amount shouldn't be enough to cover so much. It shouldn't cover your whole life. Otherwise, you definitely would have people that will not do anything.
I think this should be the equivalent of, I get to go out on an extra date night or something like that. I mean, I'm dumbing it down.
Dang, but
like,
you got $1,000 date night, Sean?
No, what I'm saying is, like, this should be the equivalent of like an extra nice thing.
This
doesn't buy me anything sustainable that I would do like month after month. This is extra nice. Like, I think one of the videos or articles that I was watching was talking about, like, this isn't always going to create new business. This isn't always going to pay for people's groceries or whatnot. Sometimes this is going to relieve stress from people. Somebody might decide to start up an art studio or take an art class or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like
there, I had a friend of mine I was talking to. We were talking about UBI or kind of. We were talking about how automation is going to get rid of jobs and stuff.
That's
and
then true.
We need to like have a supplemental income like in Star Trek where everyone just doesn't have to work. And then I asked her, I was like, well, won't people just like stay home and not do anything? And her thought was like humans are, they get bored if they're not doing anything or they don't have a sense of purpose. So people will go out and just start doing what they want to do instead of doing things for money.
Well,
think about millionaires. Think about the rich. Like they don't just stop working.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
They do something. Some way they like end up blowing the money. Like so, either they start becoming like serial entrepreneurs or
they go to space.
They marry really young women that blow their money. Like one way or another, like people are going to do something.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, but part of the argument is this, that it can also is a very excessive cost of program and it can help
compared to what?
Well, not just, it's just now that you're tackling on top of this, like you said, you need a transition period to reduce the welfare, right? Overall, like, it's going to be a costly program. And it is going to expand that cost because now we're expanding to everybody else too now. And then there is a different, a lot of people talked about the inflation behind this as well sometimes. So it can also kind of like, as a result, like everybody's spending more money and prices can go up as well. They can raise the prices because there's more demand in that, right? They can also kind of cause some kind of inflation reaction. Who knows? But we don't know until we tested this out.
Yeah, but that would be be the same thing now. Like people got a stimulus check. Like prices on things like haven't gone up. Sometimes they do, sometimes
Houses have gone up a lot. Cars have gone up a lot. Beef and chicken. Food has gone up a lot.
A decent amount of that is shortage.
That's because of shortage. That's not because of UBI. I get that, but that's a whole different conversation we have.
I'm gonna include that in with the stimulus and throw that back in your faces. That's what's gonna happen.
But I feel like all the pros outweighs a con. I still feel like this is a Sean, to your point, like it's a program that's definitely to be tested out, and I just think that there's a lot more pros where it could help reduce poverty. It could help with wages. It could help break the cycle. And then with like automation coming in, like you said, Robert, like a lot of those jobs are not going to ever come back, right? And so you can also charge a VAT taxes for those people who are automating certain things to help cover that cost of the UBI. Because now that's what they do in Europe, by the way. Like if you want to automate some stuff, there's a VAT fee tax for that stuff because guess what? You're reducing such a number of overhead. You're gonna, even though, yeah, yes, you can get, you're making more profit, so you take a chunk of that and it gets taxed for that.
But you're pushing against innovation, which I don't like.
You technically not, because
you technically because you're taxing for every automation that you do.
But that's the thing. There's a fine line on the amount, right? Like, I'm not saying like, so let's say that you cut 100 jobs, right? The company saves literally almost, let's just say, you know, $500,000 every, and I'm just throwing a number out there, $500,000 a year, right? This should be at least a 1-2% tax on that versus
no.
I don't know. I personally think because the things that right now, it's.
I think we have to push people.
We have to push people into jobs that they're going to get into next.
No, but that's
like, I don't think that's that like taxing to like improve our lives is a bad.
Yeah, thing. No, I mean because that's the same reason. Like if we go with that policy, like we'll never be out of poverty. A lot of areas that are like currently productive. Like you have to move forward and you know if a few people, you know,
I don't think
probably not the most ideal like view on it, but it's like if you people have to like suffer for that for the greater good, like
no, I get that. Well, that depends on that VAT tax can help supplement that program to teach people to educate them, hey, to get another job. I get it. But I feel like those businesses who can afford that, because guess what? It only benefits the profit right now dramatically for them. And cutting 100 jobs for a business, I mean, they can save a lot of money for just because of automation piece. Like, hey,
I just strongly disagree with that because like if you don't give, the only way companies want to spend as little money as possible.
Correct.
If you take away the ability for them to decrease their margin, they're not going to drive to improve things. So I strongly disagree with staying in the way of optimization.
We're going to get more taxes anyways because the increase in profits is going to be taxed.
Well, not really, because a lot of companies have loopholes to avoid that.
And that's not on your tax law, right? Like you should change that instead of adding another tax on top. Because you add more taxes, you never take them away.
Well, that's the thing is that you're adding a tax towards the technology piece of that. So I don't know. I see where you're going. Like you're taxing innovation in a sense, but there has to be some kind of, because you're that badly added tax piece. I feel like it plays in a role where it's significantly, it's significantly impacting the economy. Like for example, imagine Walmart automates everything, right? You only see one employee, whatever it is. And you're losing like literally thousands and thousands of jobs for lower income people. Those people, now what? How did they learn to find other better jobs, right? It has to be programmed for them to get trained, certified.
But I don't think that comes from the company. I think that comes from the government. I think that comes from them saying like, all right, like Den said, like we have to set up a pipeline where the companies are starting to pay their closer to their fair share, or if not like truly their fair share. Close
loopholes instead of adding more taxes on. I think that's a better, easier job, because we have so many loopholes. Just like get rid of them.
Yeah. That's one way to do that as well, to solve that issue, because I feel like there's got to be some way to cut, offset some of this extra cost here coming from UBI. So I don't think UBI program is just be sufficient. It has to have education around it. Like, and if people see the benefit of UBI showing that, hey, listen, hey, you can take this $1,000 to learn, get certified. You can take $1,000 just to do this or do this. Like you say, Sean, people are, they will learn. They see that, okay, you know what? I will apply for this. And it gets them engaged already.
Yeah. All right. At the end of the day, UBI is for the win. And, let's slowly phase out.
Now, until we find something better.
Sean, just run for Congress, man.
I don't want to take pay cuts.
But you know what? Benefits for life.
Again, I don't want to take pay cuts.
It's okay. You got your wife working soon. Don't worry. Yeah. All right. So we're going to end this episode. We are typical rants. So Robert, what do you want? What do you have for us?
Oh, you want me to start the rant?
Yeah.
So my rant is that Russell Westbrook got traded to the Lakers. And I find that ridiculous.
Why?
Please tell us why. Because it's ridiculous. Like, why does LeBron need more
people? AD asked for it, not LeBron. AD asked for it, though.
It doesn't matter. Like, what? Everything goes through LeBron, right? I feel like, you know, everyone was like, oh, they got, like, the Nets got James Harden. They do all this against a 36-year-old freaking guy. KD's 33. It's not like he's that much younger, right? Like, it's just like two powerhouses just like keep building up.
How old is Westbrook now? 32? 31?
He should be like 1 year younger or older than Durant.
Really?
Yeah.
He's younger than Durant. He's pretty beat up. I mean, to quell your anger, then this is not going to work. They lost their only shooter in KCP.
True. Yep.
And now they have their three best players are all interior scorers.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. It's going to blow up. Don't worry.
Shoot threes. Okay, guys.
By the way, Westbrook's
32. I saw him shoot a three in Steph Curry's face and say, I didn't see anything. Like that, I can't see anything. Like, yeah. All right. He can shoot.
Well, okay. So I kind of agree with Sean in a sense, because KCP literally was the butter that held them together. That shooting.
Which sucks. Yeah. Like, that's your best 3-point shooter.
Yeah. It's just crazy. KCP literally could score on the wheel. And Kyle Kuzma was like, I feel like he disappeared this season, though. But with Westbrook, though, the thing is now who's hogging the ball more now between AD and Westbrook? LeBron could play off the ball.
No.
AD doesn't hog the ball.
Seriously, like, yeah, AD doesn't hog the ball. And
LeBron can play off the ball.
Westbrook is my best player in the league post-Kobe. So, like, he gets a lot of crap for, like, being a high utilization. But look at the end of last year. Like, he was dishing it to all of the players.
His triple-double is crazy.
But just outside of the triple-double, like,
he's lowered his scoring a lot.
Yeah.
So, his
scoring dropped.
Have you seen his turnover ratio, though?
It got better at the end of the year.
Okay, no, that's fine. But his turnover ratio is still horrible.
Yeah, but his assist ratio is like really, really high. But like he's saying, gonna
didn't he do like 20 something assists in the game or something?
Yeah.
At the end of last year, he's
I'm not saying
he's become saying more of a distributor than a.
I mean,
yeah, he was turning almost into a Draymond Green. Hold where on, he was just like, now? I'm only going to put up like 15 shots a game.
Yeah.
Wait, who is Laker has now? Hang on, as a bench now. I'm just wondering now.
It doesn't matter because also like there's news that DeMar DeRozan is going to like wants to sign with them.
The Clippers? No, it's with the Clippers.
DeMar DeRozan?
The Clippers. Already?
Yeah, I think they're trying to get to the Clippers, not to the Lakers.
No, I heard that he'll take less to go to the Lakers. And then,
I feel bad for what's called. I feel bad for Phoenix though, man. They're gonna have a tougher time now with the West.
Whatever.
I want Phoenix to go back to NBA final next year. To be honest with you, because they're a fun.
It's not gonna happen.
They're a fun team to watch though.
Yeah, unless the Lakers all get hurt again, which I guess is possible with the guys that they have.
I mean, you got the Warriors coming back healthy like this.
Yeah.
Oh, Charlie Clay's coming back next year.
Clay's
coming back, and they're gonna get Bradley Beal. So
I'm hoping that we trade for Bradley Beal. Like that's what I was.
Who we give up for Bradley Beal? That's the question.
Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman. We had two draft picks this year.
James Wiseman is good though. I would like to keep James Wiseman because I mean, he's gonna develop really.
I think he's good too. But if you can get Bradley Beal, like I feel like that's.
How old is Bradley Beal now? 33, 34.
No, he's not that old. He's like 30. Yeah.
He's younger than Westbrook.
29, 30?
No, yeah. he's younger than Westbrook, really?
Yeah.
He was a couple years after, like 5 years after us.
Yeah, so. he played Florida for 1 year. I know that. So he's 28 right now. He's 28.
Yeah, he's young.
He's young. I knew he played Florida for 1 year. That's why I knew.
But I think even without Bradley Beal, I feel like the Warriors, with adding Clay back, it like spreads out the floor more, makes it better for them.
Well, Wiggins has gotten better throughout the year.
Yeah, and also we forget they were the eighth seed before. Yeah, they were the eighth seed with
before Steph got hurt.
Yeah, no.
No. Like at the end of the year, they were eighth seed.
Add Clay and
and Steph got hurt throughout the year. Draymond was hurt throughout the year. Well, Wiggins got better as the year went on, and Wiseman. Got hurt at the
end. What's his face decided to show up at the second half of the season? What's his name? What's his name?
Kelly Oubre. But Kelly Oubre. He's gone. He's like wants.
No,
too
but
much
he
money.
Started. He started showing up the second half of the season though. So
yeah. I don't know. Lakers are just like they're getting too many players, like too many, too many stars.
All right. So moving on. So Sean, what's your rant?
My rant is sorry. Books for the LA specific rants, but LeBron James went to a Usher concert this week.
Nice.
And on his way walking to the backstage area, a fan tried to approach him and LeBron gave him, you know, a stiff arm.
He basically just threw him into the stands.
Really?
Hurt him so bad. No.
Is there video for this?
It was literally just like a slight shot.
There's video for it. Yeah. Okay. Like he pushed like, please the get person. It,
please
maybe.
Don't run up on me.
Wait, was it bad though?
No, it wasn't bad at all. He literally literally stuck out his wingspan and said, like, stay at least this far away from me.
So what exactly happened to them?
Everyone's just in an uproar. He's like, oh, like LeBron's assaulting fans. LeBron needs to be sued.
I think the fan is like super weak because like, or like LeBron doesn't know his own strength, right? Like it's like, it looked like he was just barely touching him and the guy like flew.
He didn't even fly that much. The person just essentially stopped walking forward.
I think the fan is flopping as much as LeBron was flopping.
That's
what he was doing. He was just trying to show LeBron.
He's a true stan.
True stan. That's what it was.
Yeah, but anyway, I just think people need to respect everyone's like personal bubble. You know, one, it's COVID going on. Two,
well, the fans shouldn't be there in the first place. So yes, I agree on that part.
I mean, that's what fans do. Like it's a concert. Like they're.
No, it doesn't matter though. I don't care if it's a concert. The fans shouldn't be doing that at all to any celebrity in general, to anybody.
Yeah. No, I agree, but
concert, right? People are close to each other. Like, it happens.
Oh, there's no rope. There's no rope, anything like that. I just see this video, I guess. Yeah. And he had any bodyguard?
Yeah, the bodyguard continued to push like other people that tried to come.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. My rant is that in the past 2 weeks, my car got hit in the same spot. One was a hit and run in a parking lot, and I was livid because I was like, I literally got this bumper fixed 4 months ago for this same exact situation. And so they hit me, hit and run, never left a note. And then today, this girl pulls out in front of me and literally hit the same exact bump and made the dent worse.
I mean, so, I don't think the worst dent is the bad part about this. Also, the girl hits you and you know who it is now. So you can
at least I know who it is
now. You can get a free bumper now.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, I wish I didn't have to drive. I miss California lifestyle where I didn't drive, had to worry about this kind of stuff, which is nice. So I didn't drive in Florida. I mean, California was nice.
I mean, could you Uber around in Florida too?
It's too expensive right now, man. It's too expensive right now.
Is it too expensive? Is it because there's no drivers?
There's no drivers right now. To go 2 miles, $25.
You got the money. You're balling out. Yeah. So
yeah, I mean, just expense it.
Just expense exactly. You're a consultant. You're a consultant. Expense it all. It all goes on the company's dime anyway.
First of all, I can't travel for work, so I can't expense anything. Okay?
It's not that you can't travel. You elected not to travel. Well, that's a difference. Yes,
for health reasons. Okay? That's probably why. Okay.
There's a difference.
All right. So that's a different story. You're right. Okay. But therefore, I cannot expense anything. So. Yeah. Anyway, that's my rant though. For the drivers, listen, learn how to drive better. That's all. Just learn how to drive better. Just get off your phone. So like, you can tell that girl's on her phone too. So.
I know other people that are on their phone when they drive too.
Yeah. I agree. But still, you know, just anyway. All right. So folks, leave a comment. Let us know what you think about UBI and welfare. What are you leaning towards too? If you're on welfare, let us know what the good and bad things about it perhaps. Or
yeah, we might have missed something, right? We probably missed something about I'm sure we did. What's good about welfare, because we've only heard bad stories about it. If you have any ideas on why UBI is bad, like
drop a comment, let us know for sure. Or you're listening, you're in a country who's receiving UBI, let us know how it is.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. Well, again, please subscribe, hit below the subscribe button, smash the like button, you know, and you can find our other episodes at www.gfo.com. And you can always please, you know, subscribe to our Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can find us, leave us comments. And anything else, Robert? Did I miss anything else?
No, thanks for coming back on, Sean. Do you want to pimp anything out?
Nope.
All right.
Well, enjoy Denver, Sean. And hopefully you settle down a little bit more now.
Yeah, we'll see.
we're going to go out there, okay, to do some hiking, okay? So.
Sounds good. All right, boys.
See you guys later.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks. Until next time. Take it easy. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts Podcast. As always, we appreciate you. If you are watching us on YouTube, please don't forget to subscribe to our channel, like this episode, and leave us a comment. If you are listening to us, please leave us your honest review on your preferred podcast listening platform. And as always, you can find us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GFOT Thoughts. Drop a comment and give us some feedback. We would love to hear from you. Until next time, see you then.